The grace, mercy, and peace of the triune God be with you. Well, most times when I go in a store, I know exactly what I'm looking for, right? I mean, I can even picture it as I'm driving up to the store. I get in the store. I head right for it, right? Eddie, you're shaking your head. You know what I'm talking about, right? And you go right to the thing, and you go to the, and you're done, right? And it's there's just no, yeah, no fuss, no muss. But every once in a while, I kind of wander around. I'm not really sure what I need. I don't know exactly what I'm looking for. And somebody will come up to me, several people will come up to me and say, "Do you need help, sir?" And I just kind of wave them off. I think what I'm really looking for in those moments is a sign of hope. I do. I mean, I'm looking just for some sense that this is all going to be okay in the end, right? Some reassurance. But if you say that out loud at HEB, it kind of freaks people out just a bit. I'm looking for hope. Really? Well, okay, good luck with that. So if we don't have any of that here in our store. What are you really looking for these days? What are you looking for? If you are looking for hope and you're willing to fess up that that's what you're really looking for, you might try sitting at the feet of Saint Anne of Lamont. Do you know who I'm talking about? She's been writing about faith for a couple of decades. She's a fiction writer, and then she began writing about her faith. And it's kind of a no-nonsense, compassionate, brutal honesty. So in her book, Small Victories, Lamont writes this: "The worst possible thing that you can do when you're down in the dumps, tweaking, vaporous with victimized self-righteousness, or bored, is to take a walk with dying friends. They will ruin everything for you. They ruin your multitasking high, the bath of agitation, rumination, and judgment you wallow in. They bust you by being grateful for the day, while you are obsessed with how thin your lashes have become and how wide your bottom." I have found Lamont's words to be so true. If you're looking for hope, you find it in the most unlikely places. We'll come back to her friends, Barbara and Susie, in a few minutes. Where do you find some of the most soul-stirring visions in the Old Testament? Yes, you find them in the absolute worst of times. It was 6th century BC. And God's people were living under house arrest in Babylon, in a foreign country. They had suffered a humiliating, devastating military defeat. The city of Jerusalem was a shambles, leveled by the invading armies. The temple, the center of their faith, was razed to the ground. They had no power. They had no energy to resist or persist or whatever. They had no capacity to believe that anything good could come their way from their captivity in Babylon. No hope that things could be different. But somehow, out of the bad news of Babylonian captivity came new songs. We read one of them this morning from Isaiah 35. It's supposed to be in 2nd Isaiah, for those of you who are technical biblical scholars, but it got misplaced. If you look at Isaiah 40, and many of the Handel Messiah pieces are from Isaiah 40 through 50, it fits. Because it's about the transformation of the land. It's this vision that even disabilities, emotions, and destinies would be transformed at some undetermined time in the future. It's about homecoming. It's about liberation. It's about the end of sorrow and the end of sighing. And even the earth gets caught up in this dance and is rejoicing and singing and cascading with joy. Verse 8, which we didn't read this morning, I think it's my favorite part of the vision. The prophet says that no traveler, not even fools, can go astray on the way of hope. Did you hear that? No traveler, not even fools, can go astray on the way of hope. I think this promise was written for me and for all stubborn sojourners who truly believe that it is a spiritual discipline not to ask for directions. So as you listen to the reading of Isaiah 35, and then you listen to my just very brief hitting the highlights, I wonder if it seemed to you like just so much wishful thinking. For me, there's an important difference between naive optimism and radical biblical hope. Although for many churches and many Christians, they're just kind of mushed together into the same thing. Naive optimism offers platitudes. It serves up half-truths. You know them all too well. God helps those
who help themselves.
Love the sinner, but... oh, you know them. Yeah. Naive optimism pretends that things really aren't all that bad. Shoulders back, chin up, carry on, it's all good. But it's really not all good. The vision of Isaiah is not Pollyanna. It is firmly rooted in reality. Each part of that vision, if you look back at it, is tied to the horror of everything that those people have been through. Lush land that was laid waste by armies and turned into desert. People who are now prisoners, captives of war, wounded, suffering. And then each part of the vision imagines stunning transformations, not just for humans, but for every single created thing. Biblical hope is not naive optimism. Biblical hope looks those horrific realities in the face and refuses to give up. Biblical hope proclaims this is not the final chapter. It looks like the end, but this is not the end. There's more. Biblical hope says in soaring language that there is a future for God's people and there's goodness out there. Don't you know that visions like Isaiah 35, that they kept God's people alive when they had no earthly reason, no reason for hope? Earlier this year, following our cathartic 2016 election, and I use the word cathartic carefully there, the New Yorker offered a series of reflections from 16 authors. And there was a stunning piece in there, just a short piece, by the Dominican-American writer Juno Diaz. His essay was titled, "Radical Hope is Our Best Weapon." And yes, there is a sermon just in the title, "Radical Hope is Our Best Weapon." He writes the article as a letter to his godchildren, and he talks about the impact of the election. And then he asks, what now? Well, the first thing he says is that we must feel. We must feel. This is what we offered last week in relation to gun violence, right? I mean, a space to lament, a place to feel all the different places where we are, to mourn and to bear witness to what we've lost and what so many communities have lost. And then he says we must continue to organize and fight, even though the prospect of more fighting seems so unimaginable and difficult. And then finally, Diaz says that all the fighting in the world isn't going to help us without one thing: hope. And by hope, he doesn't mean naive optimism. In fact, he says that in his essay. He means the same biblical hope that we've been circling around this morning. The hope that is not so much about something that you have that you can always hold on to, but something that you practice, a stance that you take toward the future. What makes hope radical for the prophets and for Diaz is that it's directed toward a goodness and a wonder that is out there in the future, but that is also beyond our current ability to understand it or even describe it. And so we speak of it how? In visions and images and poetry, as Isaiah did. In an interview, Diaz expands on what he means by radical hope. And what he said, I found it so moving that I wanted to share some of it with you. Hope, he says, is about how you understand your community. He says, when I constitute my community, I include the people who come before me, and I include the possibility of people who will come after me. This opens up a lot more room and a lot more space. I mean, if you focus just on those people who have hurt you or who have hurt your people, or on whatever the latest terror or injustice or evil that's gone on in the last week, if your focus is on that, then you are operating in a narrow space. You're in a corner. But if you extend your community more generously, especially to include all of those who wake up every single day to live generously and to love relentlessly, then, my friends, there are a whole lot more grounds for hope. Amen? Diaz again. White people used to own bodies like mine. Did you hear that? White people used to own bodies like mine. And when I look at what my community has done to change that, when I look over what my community has done to make democracy possible, when I look at what my community has taught this world about justice and about humanity in the face of abysmal inhumanities, well, I've got to tell you, that alters the calculus of hope. And it gives me hope. I'm a child of blackness. Blackness was not meant to survive. And we have survived. We have thrived. And we've given this world more genius than we have ever received. Let that sink in for a minute. We have given the world more genius than we have ever received. You've heard Paul speak, St. Paul, the apostle, speak about the peace that passes understanding. This, my friends, is a hope carried in this community that passes all understanding, because it's a hope that points to something good that is coming in the future, that is transcendent, that is surprising, that is unexpected, that is a gift from God. And we don't even have the words for it. Remember Anne Lamott and her friends? I mentioned them at the beginning of the sermon, Barbara and Susie. Barbara has been living with Lou Gehrig's disease for 2 years. Susie is her amazing partner. They look like your smartest cousins, Lamott observes. This was not what Barbara and Susie had signed up for. Their plan was to travel all over the world and to help people with breast cancer. But they're willing to redefine themselves. They're willing to redefine life. They're willing to redefine what it means to be okay. And Lamott says there is so much grace in seeing that. Redefinition is a nightmare, isn't it? Because it involves letting go of some things that we hold on to with a death grip. Barbara, who speaks now through a computer voice named Kate, keeps a list of things that she can still do, like clip her nails with a giant clipper, hear songs in her head, and enjoy a baseball game if the Giants are winning. from California. They have learned, Lamott says, that we can mourn what we lose, but we don't have to go down to the grave with it. And so in the face of all of the hopelessness, especially in progressive communities, all the hopelessness that is trending right now, I need to hear all of this. That radical hope is defiant. It's defiant. It looks reality in the face and it refuses to give in or to give up because God is still at work. She is still writing the story. Amen? So practice hope, my friends. Practice hope. In the face of whatever darkness you find yourself in, whatever dead ends that you face, expect that hope will show up there, unannounced, surprising. And remember that no one can go astray on the way to hope, not even fools. No one. No one. And may hope trend in your head and in your hearts and in this community of faith. Amen.